Now, live from the beautiful Valley Free Radio Crystal Ballroom overlooking the magnificent Florence Community Center window well, it's the Enviro Show on WXOJLP 103.3 FM, Northampton. Northampton.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake, birds and snakes, an airplane. Lenny Bruce is not a
Greetings, Earthlings. It's the Dump on the Aquifer Enviro Show, Part 2. It's proposed landfill expansion, Hootenanny. Mary Cerez joins us to ask the musical question, does your water taste funny when your neighbors dump it? Dump on it. Dump.
Dump on in it.
Dump in it. Check out her recent piece in the Valley Advocate. Also, we look deep into the darkness with Darth Chaney and the Boy Emperor. Check out the Enviro Show, Echo Chamber, and the quote of the week. But first, it's time for... Revenge of the Critters. Shark attacks boy in his bedroom. Anyone involved in a shark attack would be considered unlucky. But few could claim to have been as luckless as Sam Hawthorne. The teenager survived a terrifying ordeal when he was bitten in the face by one of the killer beasts in his own bedroom. The attack happened when the 14-year-old sleepwalked into a long-dead souvenir shark hanging on the wall of his nautical-themed room. He was left with the creature embedded in his cheek and blood pouring from the wound. His mother, Susan, said it was like something out of a horror film. Jaws struck in the middle of the night at the family home in Dudley, West Midlands. Mrs. Hawthorne was woken by her son's screams, but arrived too late to fend off the deadly fish, a holiday souvenir.
Or a dead fish, you mean.
A dead fish.
It's not a fish, anyway.
Yeah, it's right.
It's, yeah, not
a fish. It's a mammal.
Let's get it anatomically correct here.
The shark must have been embedded in Sam's cheek for about 15 minutes, and he was in a lot of pain, she said.
Arr.
Fortunately, Sam escaped with just a small scar. Quote, "It was the most frightening experience of my life," he said. That's right. All right. Let's move on to the Enviro Show Quote of the Week. And this comes from author, Susan Griffin.
Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going now. Stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going now. Stop.
Okay, pull ourselves together here after the shark attack. The part of the mind that is dark to us in this culture, that is sleeping in us, that we name unconscious, is the knowledge that we are inseparable from all other beings in the universe.
Be me.
All right, it's time to move on. Oh, Glenn, you know what time it is. Do you know what time it is, Glenn? Yes.
Oh, it can't be. Isn't it over?
When will it be over, Glenn? It's
Yes. Well, according to the official Backwards Bush countdown timer, we have 41 days. God, it seems like it goes on forever. 41 days, 17 hours, 21 minutes, and 20 seconds at the buzzer. 41 days and 17
hours. Isn't that
hours.
Like when it's going to rain for 40 days and then everybody
exactly.
gets in that boat and floats off?
Yeah, man, a lot can happen in 41 days, and a lot will, I'm sure.
It can't go fast enough for me.
No.
All right. Now, we've been talking these past few weeks about all the ecological damage.
What have you been smoking, man?
These enemies of the earth have been up to. Last time we delved into the top 100 Bush regime rollbacks. Now add this one. Their vile minions in the EPA have finalized rules that will make it easier for mountaintop mining companies to dump their waste near rivers and streams.
They can blow up the mountain and then dump it in your river.
Washington Post. The Bush administration finalized rules yesterday. This was Wednesday. So few days back, that will make it easier for mountaintop mining companies to dump their waste near rivers and streams, overhauling a 25-year-old prohibition that had sparked legal and regulatory battles for years. The regulation got sign-offs from the Office of Management and Budget and the EPA last week, and will go into effect 30 days after it is published in the Federal Register. The change is intended to resolve a nearly five-year-old fight over how companies can dispose of vast amounts of rubble and sludge created when they blow the tops off mountains to get to the coal buried below, although the incoming Obama administration could revisit the issue. Yes. Mountaintop mining, which yields 130 million tons of coal a year and accounts for 10% of the nation's coal production, is cheaper and safer than underground mining. But this method of reaching valuable low-sulfur coal seams below ground generates large amounts of rubble and sludge that are usually trucked away to be dumped in the region's steep valleys. Under a 1983 law, mining operators were barred from dumping the massive piles of debris called valley fills within 100 feet of any intermittent or permanent stream. if the material could harm a stream's water quality or reduce its flow. That could happen, right?
Maybe, yeah.
But federal and state courts have issued conflicting interpretations of the law, and widespread dumping continued. The government estimated that about 1,600 miles of streams in Appalachia have been wiped out since the mid-80s, and regulators expect that roughly 100 miles of streams will be legally filled each year under the new rule. Moving down here, environmentalists decried the decision, noting that the EPA study in July documented the waste from the coal mining operations in southern Western Virginia has been found to be a strongly related to downstream biological impairment. Well, yeah.
I wonder why.
Vernon Haltman, co-director of West Virginia-based Coal River Mountain Watch.
Hey, we had him on. We had him on the Enviro show.
Yo, Vernon.
Yeah.
Said EPA Administrator Stephen Johnson's letter certifying that new rule complies with the Clean Water Act. He says it's a slap in the face of Appalachian communities that have already endured enough injustice from mountaintop removal. My home and thousands of others are now in greater jeopardy. But Cindy Rank of the West Virginia Highlands Conservancy said some of the waterways that have been lost are significant, even if they are not major rivers. Quote, with this rule change, the outgoing Bush administration is poised to eliminate forever more of our headwater streams, the very lifeblood of our mountains and the source of healthy river resources that future generations will depend upon.
And right. in their inimitable way, about 15 years from now, when the whole water crisis comes down on them and they realize what they have done, they'll say, oh, we're so sorry. We made a mistake.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And nobody is going to hang for this.
And this just in. Interior Department changes rule to remove Congress veto. In New York Times... In another regulatory action in the waning days of the Bush administration, the Interior Department on Thursday unveiled a new rule that challenges Congress's authority to prevent mining planned on public lands. Congress has emergency power to stop mineral development and has used it 6 times in the last 32 years. The most recent was in June when it put a 3-year moratorium on uranium mining on 1 million acres near Grand Canyon. Interior Secretary Kemp Thorne has ignored that congressional directive, saying it was procedurally flawed. The new rule issued by the Interior Department's Bureau of Land Management comes as environmental groups are suing the Bureau in federal court for failing to obey Congress's directive, which under a 1976 law can be invoked when an emergency situation exists and extraordinary measures must be taken to preserve values that would otherwise be lost. The revision of the rule eliminates all references to congressional authority. The revision moved through the often cumbersome rulemaking process with lightning speed.
Yes.
Lightning speed!
Lightning.
Where are we? It was proposed in October, and the public was given 15 days to comment. The rule seems intended to speed a judicial confrontation on the constitutionality of the 1976 law and to underscore the Interior Department's determination to leave public land near the Grand Canyon National Park in northern Arizona open for mineral development.
41 days more of this, you know.
Yeah. Let's move on. Enviro Show, Echo Chamber. We pile on D.C. No, let's forget about that. Big Auto. Hey.
Hey.
How about Big Auto?
You got a couple billion, buddy?
Did they get too much? Did they get enough? We'll find out very soon. But today, I had the good fortune to stumble on a webcast of Representative Ed Markey's, what is that? Markey. He held a fascinating, by the way, fascinating hearing that was sparsely attended today in the House Select Committee on Global Warming and Energy Independence. And they had a bunch of people testifying there, and witnesses spoke about what the bill needs and what's not in the bill. And what's not in the bill is that waiver on the EPA emissions in favor of the California landmark. This is the one that Massachusetts and all the other states are on board with.
Lead plaintiff, Massachusetts.
Yes. Yeah. Apparently they're taking a pass on that, and the Dems are caving yet again.
Yet spineless.
And also...
spineless tube worms.
Yes. And also there are no safety standards in there. And there's no shared patents and no provision about U.S. manufacturing, and so that they could offshore things.
Yep.
And no R&D incentives. And what else isn't there in there? Real civil penalties for noncompliance. They forgot to put that in.
It's voluntary.
You wonder what these people think government is for. I mean, why do we have a government if we're not going to let it do anything? You know, all we need is a president. Just get the president, let him do whatever he wants. The rest of us can go home.
Well, we've had 8 years of
that, haven't
we? And
they think this is a good idea. I taught political science for all those years, and it was a total waste of time because there is no such thing. There's just one man backed up by Cheney and Karl Rove and Rumsfeld and those people doing whatever he damn well feels like, excuse me.
Pretty much, mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, there was a Representative Miller from Michigan who spoke, and she's not at all pleased that Wall Street didn't even appear before Congress.
Right.
You know, they had their
bailout $700 billion
to them.
Thank you.
So there's that. What else in the echo chamber? No. Moving on.
I don't know.
Obama embraces big oil. James Jones.
That must have been kind of a greasy hug, huh?
We'll forget about that. Here we go. This is from Politico. Jones gives hope to energy companies. President-elect Barack Obama's choice for national security advisor, retired Marine General Jim Jones, is giving hope to energy companies that backed Republican John McCain that their concerns may still get an airing in the new administration. The appointment also could set up potential disagreements on climate change within the Obama team if the president-elect selects an aggressive global warming advocate. Aggressive global warming advocate for the Environmental Protection Agency. I think they don't mean...
No. Anti-warming. Yes. Cooling.
Yes. Jones comes to the White House by an extraordinary route via the Republican-dominated U.S. Chamber of Commerce, where he was promoting an energy policy opposed by congressional Democrats and not fully embraced by Obama. And get ready for this one.
What?
Jones... has been on the board. It was a board of directors.
Of?
Guess.
No.
Two guesses.
Chevron?
Yes, Chevron.
Yes, I won.
Another man from Big
I
Oil.
I won the door prize.
At the White House, Jones' primary job will be to coordinate defense and foreign policy among the Pentagon, State Department, myriad intelligence agencies, and others.
Does that include the military-industrial complex?
It is.
Head with coordinator.
With wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and a long list of other international hotspots, that's likely to take up the bulk of his time. Still, Obama noted Jones' energy expertise in announcing his
appointment. That and playing golf take up the bulk of his time.
I wonder if he plays basketball. Maybe that's why he brought him on.
Oh.
As president of the Chamber of Commerce Institute for the 21st Century Energy, Jones signed on to the pre-election day transition plan for the new administration and advocated offshore oil drilling, clean coal, and nuclear energy development.
The big three.
And cut down the Alaskan forest. And blow the tops off mountains.
Yeah.
And whatever.
Whatever goes.
Whatever.
Quote, "We're sorry to see him go," said David Chavarin, the chamber's chief operating officer. "But it gives you a lot of confidence in this administration."
It does?
Frankly.
Oh.
All right.
It gives you a lot of confidence.
And on a related note.
No, there can't be any related
notes. Watch out. Obama may be tapping John Bryson for the energy secretary.
No.
Yes.
No.
According to our own Harvey Wasserman.
Really?
Here from the Valley.
This guy that glows in the dark.
Bryson was up to his eyeballs in the California deregulation law that opened the door for Enron.
Yeah.
Good for him.
And as head of Southern Cal Edison, he pulled the plug on a proposed 600 megs of alternative energy from free from nukes and fossil fuels.
He's a big nuke supporter.
All right.
Come on. That's enough. That's enough.
Guess who's in the studio?
All right, let's introduce everybody who's here. I'm Glenn Ayers.
This is D.O. I'm your co-host.
This is Jean Grosswald.
And I'm Mary Cerez.
And Mary has a tune for you live in our studio.
Live in the studio. Are we going to bring in an accompaniment?
Yeah, we've got a guitar player who just showed up.
All right.
He could play too.
Yeah.
We have the most massive thing to play on.
Somebody just walked into the studios here. And he'll be back. You want to talk for a while? Why don't pass the mic over to?
So this is right here from our luxurious Pine Street studios.
Yeah, we need to have a name, like, you know, AMC has like the Linda Norris Auditorium.
Right.
What can we need to have a name here? Some kind of name.
Somebody put whitewash on the basement. That's what it is.
The basement auditorium. Yeah, now we're going to have to think of a good name for our studio. So that when we have live concerts here, it's being broadcast from the, you know,
you're giving
the
listeners the impression that we have
auditorium.
This vast space.
Yeah, exactly. You can hear the echoes in here.
If I lay down in the studio, my feet touch one wall, my head just about touches the other.
Yeah.
So, Mary, tell us about the song.
Well, this song was inspired by the arcane controversy surrounding the proposed Northampton landfill expansion. This topic is so gnarly, so complicated, so much like a soap opera, so much like daytime television.
It is.
But, you know, I was riding my bike home from Northampton one day, and, you know, the melody just came to me, and the words started to flow. I went home, and I just started to write it right down. I take no responsibility for the content or lyrics or any. I take no responsibility for the song whatsoever. It came through me. I channeled it.
All yeah, right. No, yeah, exactly.
Blame that bicycle.
Right. Yep. So, Mary, you've been writing a whole series of articles about the landfill in The Advocate, right?
Yeah, in the Valley Advocate. The first article I did was I looked at the history of the landfill. I went back to 1969, and I looked at the controversy that transpired back then. And the landfill was controversial even back in 1969, believe it or not. And the second article I did was called Science or Politics, where I looked at the waiver that the DEP granted the city of Northampton, which allowed the city to expand the landfill over a Zone 2 aquifer recharge area. Then the third article I did was called Trash is Good, where I looked at the economic disincentives to perhaps trying a different way, that there is a broad economic constituency for the
landfill.
There's
some gold
in
Northampton,
in that
there hill.
Yeah. Garbage is money,
if you know
what I mean. Right, yeah.
So who's accompanying you?
And then the last article was in last week's.
Where I looked at that. I looked at the permitting process. This is there's been this high stakes game, a real conflict between the mayor of Northampton and this activist group called Citizens United for a Healthy Future.
Oh, we've had them in the studio.
And you have to kind of hand it to them, because they have been using these old school Saul Alinsky tactics, and they have just forced a stalemate on this issue.
Yeah.
You know, they're just a bunch of ragtag citizens, and they have really created a stir. If were it not for Citizens United, the landfill expansion would have gone through quietly.
Oh, yeah.
It would have gone through quietly. They made it into an issue.
Right.
So, you know, bless their pointed little hearts. But, yes.
Yes.
Right.
Hooray.
But at this point, the Board of Public Works is holding the cards, and they are the people, the ball's in their court. Okay, block that metaphor.
Right.
They are the body that's going to have to decide whether to advance a special permit application to the City Council or not. And the point I make is that 6 months ago, the mayor of Northampton was saying when the Board of Public Works applies for the permit.
Right.
And now she's saying if.
If.
So
yeah.
The chair of the Board of Public Works, Dave Reckow, is insisting upon time to think, to gather information, to involve the public. And who knows what's going to come of this, whether...
They may make an informed decision.
They may make an informed decision.
Yeah.
Maybe they won't. But at least one person is choosing to pull rank and to
do the right thing,
claim to assert the power of his office.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah,
pretty cool how people can get involved. And I just want to do a little plug for the New England Grassroots Environment Fund, which has provided some of the funding to help this little local organization get organized and supported their efforts. So, and it's a great organization.
So who's accompanying?
This is John Koster. He's my friend and my partner in crime. We play a lot of music together, kind of kitchen sink music.
Great.
Yeah, and this song's called Going to the Landfill, you know? And the point is, like, we're all going to the landfill. Not one of us can claim that we're not going to the landfill. We're all going to the landfill.
Yeah. Now, I just want to point out that a cemetery, by definition, is just a special kind of landfill.
That's right.
So if you think about it.
Human compost, upcoming show.
Human composting,
we are
going
to be doing a show on composting, but anyway.
And the other point I want to make is that, you know, any references to characters or individuals in this song are all really pretty much fictional. It's all just a poly, it's a, what's the word? A composite.
Yes.
Yes,
yeah.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. Yep. Yeah, going to the landfill.
All right, John, you're going to come up to this mic probably.
Okay. Oh, well, you're right. Sort of in this direction.
Yeah.
That's the best we can do.
Okay.
For this.
Yeah, I think we'll be. I'll adjust things as we go.
I don't have headphones, so you guys, you're going to have to tell me how it sounds. I'm going to the landfill. Got my truckload full of trash. Going to the landfill, got my pockets full of cash. Driving on down Old Glendale Road, leaf spring sagging, it's a heavy load. Well, I've been taking it to the landfill, it's got nowhere else to go. I can get rid of anything, but I don't work for free. I used to be a garbage man. My wife, she worked with me. Our son, he bought the business, kept it in the family. Now we can get you the permit for contaminated fill. Make sure the taxpayer foots the bill. We'll roll right over the DEP. We're the solid waste industry. There's always been two kinds of green. Garbage is money, if you know what I mean. There's room in my passenger seat for ye. We made a deal, you better come with me and I'll take ya in my garbage truck. Take ya to the landfill, and I wish you lots of luck. Riding on into the morning, and a loaded gun. Well, I've been taking it to the landfill, gonna have some fun. I got a friend who works the gatehouse, I got a friend in City Hall, I got a friend who works the state house, and baby, that ain't all. I got friends inside of the business that you would not want to know. But if you got you a problem, then you know just where to go. Cause I can get you the permit. I will get you the mofo permit. We'll roll right over the citizenry. Cause we're the DEP. There's always been two kinds of green. Garbage is money, if you know what I mean. So keep on paying those tipping fees. It's the home of the brave. It's the land of the free. We're all going. Like to compost. I say, what's the use? Because as long as we be making it, there's gotta be a place to be taking it. So use it, just once and throw it away. Consume, consume, it's the American way we're all going. It's a heavy load. Well, I'll be taking it to the landfill. It's got nowhere else to go.
Wow. Wow. Very good.
Live from the VFR studio.
Are you going to sing this to the...
I already did. Oh, man. Yeah. We performed this at the Board of Public Works open forum on options to the landfill expansion. So, yeah, we did. We performed this for the Board of Public Works already.
That was on public access.
Well, yeah, the mayor was there, and the Ned Higgins, but that's a composite character. Ned Huntley.
Ned Huntley
and Claire Higgins were both there. I didn't get a chance to look at their faces, but I was told that, you know.
They appreciated
that
it
was
much.
Priceless. Oh, yeah. Very much, yeah.
Yeah. I can imagine they loved it. Yeah. It's great. All right. Well, where do we go from there? I don't know. Man, that's
we can talk about the landfill a little bit.
Yeah, that's a hard act to follow. Yeah, but, man. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the landfill and how much I hate landfills.
Now, Glenn, you were a landfill inspector at one point.
I was
in your
life. in the early 80s in Pennsylvania. I inspected landfills for the Department of Environmental Resources, the state agency, roughly equivalent to DEP, which now in Pennsylvania is actually called DEP because every state has to have the same name, I guess. But back then it was DER, and I inspected landfills, and I never met a landfill that I didn't hate and that wasn't leaking like a sieve. And these were lined landfills.
Even with
landfills.
Double composite
you bet.
Liners.
Even with they would come into the office with these big sheets of landfill liner and say, you know, look at this. It has 500% elongation capacity and blah 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 blah. And
right.
They'd put them out in the field and they would leak and leak and leak.
Well, there were two lawsuits pending, filed by Northampton citizens against the city. One charging that the landfill is in violation of city zoning regulations,
yep.
And the other charging that the landfill constitutes a nuisance by virtue of unmitigated odors and water pollution.
Yeah.
And the city has pretty much denied that the landfill is responsible for any air or water pollution and is fighting these citizens every step of the way.
Yeah. Well,
right.
It's pretty obvious that you put that much stuff in one place and you're going to generate a lot of leachate.
Oh, yeah.
And that leachate has to go somewhere, and it just, flows, and it leaks.
Well, a lot of the leachate, that which doesn't flow into the ground, is pumped to the city of Northampton's wastewater treatment plant. There's no on-site leachate treatment at the landfill. It's just pumped straight to the wastewater treatment plant.
Yeah, that's because publicly owned treatment works, they're called POTWs, are... can handle hazardous waste without complying with the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act. In other words, they're categorically exempt from compliance. So you can dump pretty much anything into a publicly owned sewer, and it doesn't have to comply with hazardous waste laws.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, we should talk about that.
That was written right into the law.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. The other issue at the landfill that's caught my attention lately is the use of fill, grading material, daily cover.
Yep.
Right. And daily cover can be anything. 20% of the landfill by weight, I believe, can be constituted by what's called daily fill. And that can be auto shredder residue. It can be contaminated soils from huge construction projects. A lot of stuff. Dirt gets hauled in, contaminated dirt from all over
gas
New England and the Northeast.
And,
right,
yeah.
Exactly.
A lot of the big dig soil went into the dump, and it is a dump in Wendell.
Uh-huh.
There was supposed to be a construction demolition landfill in Wendell.
The dump by the river?
The dump that was actually oozing its way downhill into the Miller's River. And that was a DEP approved and permitted and lined landfill, which is clearly, and you know, no one would argue that it's contaminating the Lions Brook right next to it with cyanide and asbestos and, you know, many other things. And DEP had to hire a contractor to come in after, of course, after it was inspected and inspected and inspected. And they had to spend a couple of million or more dollars to keep it from falling down into the river.
Well, who owned that? Who owned that landfill in Wendell?
It was privately owned.
Yeah, it was privately owned. It was on land that at one point had been from the Diamond Farm in
that area.
So one of the Diamonds was a owner, part owner.
Liability is a huge issue under Massachusetts general under the 21E regulation. Because if the area around the landfill is deemed to be a hazardous waste site, then I believe the city of Northampton would be responsible for cleanup and remediation costs.
Well,
wouldn't it be the owner?
It's a little more complicated because if someone finds contaminated groundwater on your property, you're liable for that contaminated groundwater under Massachusetts law. A property line.
But if they can trace the plume to a source, wouldn't...
It's difficult. I mean, even if you're next door to a landfill, you could be held liable for contaminating the groundwater, even if the groundwater is coming from offsite.
Yeah, yeah. Like everything associated with the landfill, it's complicated, very complicated.
Basically, water rights end at the property line.
So,
it would be very difficult.
But remediation would be very, very expensive.
Remediation of groundwater is kind of not feasible in most cases, especially if you're dealing in something like the Barnes Aquifer. There's no way to collect that groundwater. You'd have to pump huge, huge volumes of water, and then you'd have to treat those huge volumes. And really, it's when you get down to very low concentrations of things, it's very, very difficult to treat those low concentrations.
Hmm.
So groundwater treatment in that kind of aquifer is just wishful thinking mostly.
It would probably be treated at the wellhead.
That's typically what's done. The Leverett landfill, which I'm familiar with, has a pretty large contaminant plume that emanates from it, contaminates several nearby neighborhood wells, and the town has, the DEP has required the town to put in carbon filters on a number of houses. And those carbon filters get changed, activated carbon, they get changed every month, and it'll be probably something that's done, you know, forever in perpetuity. So,
right.
And that was a landfill that was capped according to regulations and everything. But it's going to continue to leak.
Hmm.
You know, capping the landfill may reduce some of the infiltration, but in a climate that we have, where you have 40 inches of rain a year, and evaporation might be 20 inches a year, you have a net add of 20 inches a year to the groundwater. And that's going through the garbage, and it's leaking out wherever. So a lined landfill is a big bathtub, and all you need is one little hole somewhere, and you have a lot of pressure, water pressure in there.
Or if rainfall levels increase dramatically in the Northeast over the next 40 or 50 years, as they might.
I'll tell a quick story about a landfill I went to near Philadelphia one time. We actually were dressed in moon suits to go visit it because it had been a quarry at one point or a gravel pit. And they turned it into a big landfill. It was a regional landfill called Moyers Mountain. And it was, you know, for those of you who grew up in the 60s and 70s maybe, it going to this landfill was like being on acid. There was nothing that you could relate to from this world. It was totally an out-of-world experience. There were molten pools of... or molten waterfalls of plastic ooze coming down hillsides.
Oh,
there were bubbling pools of multicolored liquids, fuming clouds of steam coming out of the ground. It was like another planet. And here you were, just a few miles outside of Philadelphia in Norristown, and it was a landfill that had been permitted by the state and everything else. And you know, it's just an example of what happens. You know, I don't know if it's the best of intentions, but, you know, everybody talks about the engineering and all that kind of stuff. But when you get down to it, it's the execution that has everything to do with it. And the fact is that just like Three Mile Island or a lot of other things, you know, we have a lot of plans. But when it comes down to actually doing it in the field, things get changed all the time.
You know what I bet's going to happen, Glenn? I bet that the trend will be toward building waste to energy facilities, incinerators, because, and the reason I say this is because I believe, see, the state is granting clean energy credits. It's like, sure. Yeah, trash to energy is part of the new renewable portfolio standard.
So-called clean energy.
Right, exactly. And so there's actually a bit of a disconnect right now between the DOER, which is the state's energy division, and the DEP. Because the DEP has a ban on new incinerators, has imposed a ban on new waste-to-energy incinerators. But what DOER, what is that, Division of Energy Resources? What is DOER?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
They would very much like to put trash-to-energy plants into their renewable portfolio standard. And so to grant, you know, so-called clean energy credits for trash-to-energy. So there's going to be a lot of pressure, I believe, over the next few years to site incinerators that burn garbage.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a way to reduce the volume going into a landfill, but you still need to get rid of the ash somewhere. And it turns out that ash, in a lot of cases, is a hazardous waste because you've taken all that material and oxidized it into a highly available form.
Right.
And then it has to be disposed of somehow.
And there are newer technologies, pyrolysis and the like, but yeah. My understanding is that most of those newer technologies haven't really been successful in the field yet. That many of them need what's called a dirty MRF up front. MRF being what? A materials recovery facility,
yeah,
where
yep.
The trash stream is separated.
To take out all the chlorinated everything.
Right, exactly. The feedstock needs to be. Actually, I think that these waste-to-energy plants really like the plastics.
Well,
give a high BTU.
Yeah, it does. But that's what also creates a lot of the dioxins and other things that come out of incinerators.
Yeah. Do you know much about air quality regulation in Massachusetts or the Northeast?
It's under DEP or the local Board of Health.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably one of the least regulated areas.
They always claim that it's the most regulated. They think about low emission incineration.
Yeah.
That's what all the people at DEP are talking about.
No, I don't know how many people there are in the western part of the state that are working on air quality, but obviously their budget, DEP's budget has been, drastically cut for that. And I would say that they spend a lot more of their effort on, kind of solid waste related things, but more so Title V septic systems and wells, water supplies, public water supplies.
Actually, the state is putting together a brand new solid waste master plan.
Yeah.
And on January 6th at Holyoke Community College, and I'm sorry I don't have the exact time. I think you should maybe go to the DEP website. It's there's going to be on January 6th at Holyoke Community College. The DEP is coming around and having a kind of a dog and pony show around their new solid waste master plan. They're trying to gather input and give information. So they're calling it Landfills Last. That's the name of the new solid. Yeah, but it is. I mean, it's funny because the state's gone out of its way to permit this landfill in Northampton, and then now they've got this plan out called Landfills Last.
It sounds like some kind of radical environmental group, like Earth First, Landfills Last.
Landfills Last, right?
Yeah.
Well, Mary, what about the air quality issue in the Northampton dump? Do they burn off the methane?
Yeah, there's a methane flare there. There have been issues with the methane flare. I'm not sure exactly whether they've gotten that working correctly or not yet. There was some DEP consent order. There were real problems with a methane flare for a while, and I think they've got, I don't know. You'll have to ask somebody who lives in the neighborhood. I think, again, it's
somebody
like
the sacrifice zone.
Yeah, the city's pretty much saying that the flare's working fine, and the people who live up there say it's not. I don't know. I don't really have full information on that. But that's what they do. There's a methane flare up there. And they also have this waste-to-energy thing.
Right.
The Ameresco waste-to-energy facility.
In the early 80s in Harrisburg, we had a state-of-the-art, incinerator, if you want to call it that. But we called it the Harrisburg trash warmer because they constantly fed the rats, basically warm food. And you could go there and you could read newspapers. I mean, you from the material that came through the incineration process, you could read newspapers entirely intact. And it was. The food was warmed for the rats, and the rats were some of the biggest ones I've ever seen in my life.
Unbelievable. Yeah, I think what they do what they're trying to do up at the landfill is to do landfill gas to electricity.
Yeah.
Right, right. Yep. But I guess you can also take landfill gas and make it into a liquid fuel.
Biogas.
Yeah. Right.
Yep. They do that in India.
Yeah, they do that in India extensively
with
animal and human excrement.
But it comes down to it, and when you look at state policy, the DEP and the DOER really want to classify garbage as a renewable energy source.
Yeah.
And that's a little funny.
That's key.
You know?
Yep.
Built into that is the assumption that we're just going to keep on producing mountains and mountains and mountains of garbage.
Yeah, and we should talk about zero waste.
Yeah, let's.
Yeah.
Why don't you grab a seat?
Grab a seat here. All right.
Yeah. You know, the whole issue of landfills, you know, landfills last. Well, what do you do first?
Right. Exactly. I mean, zero waste. This guy, Gary Liss, who came and presented to the Board of Public Works and talked a lot about zero waste, he has crafted more zero waste community plans than anybody else in the country. And he talked about zero waste as being both pragmatic and visionary, that we may not ever reach zero waste, but we can design systems that will minimize waste. And one thing he said that was very interesting, he said that the more you look at it, the more you see that waste is a design decision. Right, right. So look at even starting with the way somebody's kitchen is designed. Right. Where do you put the bins for source separation? Right. How do you make it work for the homeowner? How do you make it easy?
Yep.
How do you make it consumer friendly? It's really got to work. The other thing that people that some municipalities are doing and some regions are doing they institute single source recycling. So it makes it very easy on the homeowner. You just dump everything into one big bin and you haul it out to the curb, and there are MRFs that are, you know, mechanized. They, through a combination of machines and people, they separate the trash stream at the MRF using magnets and blowers and all kinds of things like that. Then, you know, there are upstream solutions like extended producer responsibility, which is kind of like the bottle bill. So right. Let's say that some computer manufacturer is just going to they're just going to overpackage everything and, you know, lots of styrofoam, then they have to pay for its disposal. It's almost like a deposit travels with the packaging. Mm. So it puts the cost back to the manufacturer and the consumer instead of to local taxpayers for disposal.
Yeah, we really need a redesign of packaging and, you know, all that stuff. When I was a kid, you could buy Coke in returnable bottles, and they did away with that.
Right.
Why?
Exactly.
So that we can throw away all those things.
One of the things that those of us who work on food and food security have found is that if you had local organic natural food, regionally based food, you would get rid of an awful lot of the waste that now ends up in our dumps.
Yeah. And milk bottles too.
Oh yeah, right.
Yeah, there is one farm in the valley, Maple Line.
Maple Line,
that,
right.
That still delivers milk, and you can buy milk in returnable bottles. That's the only one I know of.
Yeah. Right. And a lot of cities who have embraced the zero waste concept have instituted restaurant food composting programs.
Yeah.
And I spoke with Karen Bequillen, who's the municipal solid waste coordinator for the city of Northampton. And, you know, she was saying, well, we need to work something out with the Smith School so that we have a site. You know, and I thought to myself, is that really the only way to go about doing this? So I went snooping around. I spoke with Peter Simpson over at the Haymarket Cafe. And I don't know if you've been over to the Haymarket Cafe lately, but they don't have a trash can anymore. They have a place where you can put recyclables, they have a place where you can put compostables, and they have a place where you can put your dishes that need to be washed. And they have contracted with a private hauler to come and pick up the compost at the end of the day. They have these big 96-gallon rollout carts out back. Now, they're actually paying extra for this service because they believe that it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
But they have crafted a private sector solution. And yep. I guess my point is that maybe the best thing to do is just not to wait for government to hand us the solution.
No, yeah, I think there has to be a local solution, you know, and maybe it's the Board of Health or maybe it's the Board of Public Works or somebody. They should have regulations that phase in all of the, all of the businesses in Northampton in that direction.
Or at least make it possible, like to give some sidewalk space out back for these big 96-gallon rollout carts.
Yeah.
You know, enabling it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I don't know. I mean, are we really going to wait around for the city to build a composting facility? I don't think they're going to do it.
There's things happening in the schools. For instance, in the Amherst school system, they're having composting in the lunchrooms.
Right.
And the students are getting involved.
Yeah. But they don't do that at UMass, for instance.
No,
exactly. Because I did go to the New England Grassroots Environment Fund annual meeting, and there was compost bins just at that one specific event. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they don't do it in other places.
It's so interesting.
Yeah.
I know up at Dartmouth College, they have they're very careful about all of those things, and there's just source separation opportunities everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just a matter of political will, really.
It is. And it's something that, you know, we need to push for, and we need to have people in elected office that are pushing in that direction as well. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
The thing with the landfill, because Northampton makes money off of the landfill, I think there's a resistance within the city of Northampton to doing things differently.
Yeah.
You know,
to get rid of the cash cow, it's hard. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
But they could also make money on compost and other things, and, you know, fix up the whatever town parks, city parks there are, and do that kind of restoration stuff using what's now waste.
Well, right, exactly. That's what Gary List, the zero waste expert, said when he came to town, that, well, if the city of Northampton is culling $80,000 a year, $800,000 a year in host communities fees from the landfill, then perhaps zero waste advocates need to think of another way that the city can make $800,000 a year,
yeah,
too, so that it can wean itself off of the cash and start heading in the right direction.
Yeah.
All right. Check out Mary's article in the recent at Valley Advocate. BPW takes the reins. And it's on their website, too.
Yeah, valleyadvocate.com.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah. Thanks, Mary.
Thank you.
Yeah, great series of articles in the Advocate on this.
And
discussion.
Some quick facts from Green Living, recent issue. Cost per ton of garbage collection in the U.S., $70 to $200. Cost per ton of curbside recycling in the U.S., $50 to $150. Number of jobs created per 10,000 tons of waste incinerated, 1. Number of jobs created per 10,000 tons of waste landfilled, 6. Number of jobs created per 10,000 tons of waste recycled, 36. Jobs, jobs, jobs.
Jobs, jobs, yeah.
All right, moving on to the bus stop billboard. Tuesday, December 9th, 8 p.m. Talk to Bill McGibbon and Michael Broom about global warming. This is a one of them phone deals, you know, like a, what do you call that? Phone conference.
Oh, yeah, teleconference. Yeah.
Teleconference. So type in, just call 1-866-864-8698 and type in the passcode. You can get that on our blog. Just Google in Enviro Show. It's on the bus stop billboard. Thursday, December 11th, 6 p.m., Home Depot grand opening sprawl teach-in, Food for Thought, Books and Hammers. Scheduled speakers. Well, we don't have time for the scheduled speakers, but check that out at Food for Thought.
Yeah, an anti-celebration.
An anti-celebration, yeah. Indeed. You want info on that, call 549-1193. Saturday, December 13th, 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m., Small Animals Up Close. Hey, Family Science Days are designed for families and children's ages 5 to 8, with adults participating along with the children. Come get to know some small but interesting animals. Learn how to study them as you explore their basic behaviors and adaptions. Yada, yada, yada. Please register. Call 413-256-6006. And that, of course, is the Hitchcock Center for the Environment. Saturday, December 13th, also 2 to 3:30 p.m., Two Seasons, Three Worlds, Four Treasures, Five Directions, Pillars of Druidism, an exploration of the basic cosmology of the ancient Celts. That's at In Spirit Common, 123 Russell Street in Hadley. If you want more info, call 413-585-1169. Thursday, December 18th, 7 to 9 p.m., Ritual Chant Circle to embrace the time of the Yule in the winter season. Cottage Street, East Hampton. Go to www.awentree.com. And the folks from there are going to be on our next show.
Next show, our winter solstice on the 23rd. Yeah.
That's right. More info, 527-3331. December 19th, 20th, and 21st, Mountain Justice is hosting the winter campout at Frog Level, Tennessee. If you love mountains, camping, hiking, the forest, check it out. Go to www.mountainjusticesummer.org or call 865 727-257-4029.
It could be a fun vacation for the whole family.
And winter campers like you would just love it.
Yep.
Okay. Saturday, January 10th, Washington, D.C. Keep winter cold with the polar bear plunge. They did this last year in Puffer's Pond in Amherst.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
But I haven't found them on the website there. So the polar bear plunge is happening all over. I think they did one last Saturday at Walden Pond or something.
Yeah.
They're doing it
did
all
you
over.
Did you do it?
On? To me?
Did you go dump in the water?
No. No. No polar bear plunge for me. Thank you. We choose the state because, Oh, we're running out of time? All right.
Yeah,
so you want info on that, go to www.keepwintercold.org. We got time for one more or not?
No, we're out of time.
We're out of time.
Yeah.
Hey, 2 weeks, we're going to do the winter solstice special. Next week this time is our sister show, Farm to Fork. Next up is Antidote Radio. This is Dio saying thanks, Mary.
And,
thanks.
I'm Glenn Ayers.
And
thank y'all. And remember, we're all going to the landfill.
One way
Thank
or another.
You, Mary,
yep.
for reminding us.
All right. Adios. Till next time.
And what are we listening to here?
Where do you want to go out with Cars, Cars, Cars?
Yeah.
All right. Liberty Cabbage Theater.
Okay.
Streetcars came every hour using electric for their power until one day the trolleys were dismantled. General Motors fought for setting public transit into flames. They were accused of being inefficient for the corporation's interest, and so streetcars were burned to make way for gas-powered automobiles. It's all in the name of cars, 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 cars. We're filling up the well with cars. What will we do when there's nowhere to flee and there's nothing left to see but all those cars, 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 cars. When troops came home in World War II, the GI Bill was something new. The government gave free education and home loans. Well, people of color were denied access to the same free ride, and only white folks could buy their brand new home. Shopping, exercise, dinner will be at 5. It's all in the name of cars, 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 cars. We're filling up the well with cars. What will we do when there's nowhere to flee and there's nothing left to see but all those cars, 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 cars? Expressway to East Los Angeles, brown and black neighborhoods were blasted into smithereens.
The car is most devastating to people and the land,
but it's absolutely needed for the economy.
It's all in the name of
cars, 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 cars.
Down into it.
with its ultraviolet tongue, and it turns it into smog, and then it settles in our lungs. It's all in the name of cars, 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 cars. We're filling up the world with cars. What will we do when there's nowhere to flee and there's nothing left to see but all those cars, 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 cars? It's all in the name of cars. What will we do when we've lost all the time?
Lost all our neighborhoods.
Lost all. Patience.
Lost all the basics.
Lost all our minds.